Welcome to Mental Wellness Life. I am Brooke, and yes, I changed the name of the podcast and this program because, well, part of it is because of this interview that I'm about to show you, that we're talking about emotional abuse and gaslighting and how it is very difficult to get out of a relationship when you are being emotionally drawn down. And I know I've talked about this in previous episodes that I was in a very difficult situation, relationship, however we want to call that, and I finally had to get him out of my life, and I'm still kind of reeling from that, dealing with it. And so I've had quite a few profound realizations up until this point. I didn't really see it as abuse, but I do now. And I hope that you get something from this. This is going to be groundbreaking and revolutionary and disruptive. And maybe it's not this particular interview or this conversation, but it's certainly happening. You can see it everywhere. We are starting to slowly talk about these things, and the stigma is still alive and well. So I want to read something, first of all, from my friend Jillian. You can find her on Facebook, Jillian Landis. She has a group called Unapologetic, and it's awesome. And she wrote this and posted it, I think yesterday, right after I had done this interview with my friend Danny, who's about to speak very openly about her recent abusive relationship that she's getting out of. And so it was just interesting that the timing of it, and lately for me, timing is rearing its head like crazy. So Jillian writes this: "Why on earth would you stay in such a toxic relationship? I just don't understand why someone would allow another person to speak to them that way. It couldn't have been that bad. She seemed so happy. I would never allow someone to treat me like that. He's such a nice person. He would never be cruel like that. How does abuse happen? Why is it allowed to continue? Here's the deal. We often justify the shadow side with someone's light side. There's no such thing as purely evil person. People are complex. Some of the scariest people that existed in history were known as friendly, kind, and intelligent. And on the flip side, some of the people most known for their generosity, empathy, and impact have been found out to have some deep, dark, ugly secrets. We are a blend of light and shadow, all of us. When we fall deeply in love with someone's light side, it can be easy to use that love to excuse some completely unacceptable behavior. In intimate relationships, we get to see both the light and shadow sides of our partner. Often there is an unspoken rule to keep all the shadow stuff secret. This is why it can be such a surprise when we find out an acquaintance just got arrested for child pornography, domestic abuse, violence, sexual assault, DUIs, etc. It's the shadow we all try to keep hidden, until we can't anymore. I was deeply entrenched in a relationship with a man I loved dearly." This is Jillian talking. "He had a bright light side. We had so much fun. We loved deeply. I was adored and admired. I was given many gifts. There was passion and play. We wrote many love letters. We adventured together. I traveled the world. I poured my heart into my perfect home and garden. And I suppressed so much shadow. I never spoke about the tears I shed when he was too drunk to eat the dinner I made or watch the special movie I picked out. I never shared the loneliness I felt when I laid in bed alone at night. I hid the fear that I felt when life was so very unpredictable. I shoved the shame away when I allowed painful words and cruel threats to drown my evenings. I buried the pain of betrayal when he would abandon our relationship for booze and drugs, the all-powerful mistress. Why? Well, we love each other so much. No one would understand. He treats me like a queen most of the time. This is just a phase and everything will go back to normal. I allowed my love of his light side to excuse so many levels of unacceptable behavior. I have been challenged to a new level of honoring my own worth. I can deeply love and fully appreciate someone's light side without excusing behavior that dishonors me or my values. I can unconditionally love someone. Without that love entitling them to my space, I can unconditionally love someone without betraying myself. The love we hold for anyone's bright light side does not justify abuse, mistreatment, or dishonoring of any kind. We get to hold new levels of honor and boundaries. The reason I'm reading these words of other people is because this is bigger than myself. This has now become a movement. And the reason why I'm talking about this on Mental Wellness Life is because these are the things that happen to us as women that trigger PTSD. They cause trauma that can lead to so many other things. So I'm also going to read this from a friend of mine, Rachel Smith, which she also posted last night, which is wild. It says this: why doesn't she leave? Because he has her so brainwashed that it's all her fault and that she's no good to anyone and no one will want her or love her and there's no way she can possibly make it on her own. Why doesn't she leave? Because she thinks that if she just tries harder and if she's just a better wife and a better mom, that maybe he will be happy and he wouldn't get so angry with her. And maybe he will be the same sweet, charming man that he was when they first met. Why doesn't she just leave? Because he has her convinced that if she tries, he will hurt her or kill her or her family. Because he has threatened to tell the judge that she is a bad mom and will take away her kids and she will never see them again. Because he's taken away her money and convinced her that she has no good job qualities to make it on her own financially and she will always need him. More people are concerned with why women stay in abusive relationships than why men are abusing women. Unless you've been in an abusive relationship, people have no idea how hard it is to escape. Abusers are able to fool those outside the home because they usually only abuse those inside the home. They need your support. They need your love. They do not need your judgment. Okay, one last thing, and then we're going to get into the interview with my friend Danny, who is so bravely standing up and saying, fuck no, we're going to talk about this. So, gaslighting. I know you've heard this term, but it's something that I just dealt with in this previous relationship that I just got out of. And it's, once you hear this, you're going to go, oh, I know what this is. I've dealt with this before. You know that you are self-aware. You have strong opinions, defined goals, and at the core, you know who you are. Then one day, seemingly out of nowhere, you begin doubting things, questioning people's motives, second-guessing what you want and who you are. Your confidence turns to suspicion. You feel neurotic and paranoid. You may even start to wonder, am I going crazy? You're not crazy. If you can identify with any of these feelings that I just mentioned, you may be a victim of the modern dating trend, gaslighting. It's a manipulative tactic in which a person, to gain power and control, plants seeds of uncertainty in the victim. The self-doubt and constant skepticism slowly and meticulously cause the individual to question their reality. Perhaps the best way to examine this inherently abusive behavior is to go straight to the source, the 1944 film Gaslight. The film tells a story of a husband systematically brainwashing his wife to the point that she legitimately thinks that she's going insane. The wife fights to protect her identity, all while her husband viciously tries to take it away. While it never disappeared, over 7 decades later, gaslighting has fully resurfaced in the dating world. Additionally, the movie Gaslight also touches on how gaslighting can lead to the victim developing a form of Stockholm syndrome, which the victim becomes so uncertain of their sense of reality that they are now solely dependent on the gaslighter. One of the most troubling aspects of gaslighting is that everyone is at risk. In fact, it is a method commonly used by cult leaders and dictators. While many of us have the good sense to not join a cult, we can experience gaslighting in our personal relationships without even realizing it. Unfortunately, gaslighting is also used by abusers and narcissists, and it can be difficult realizing you may have those people in your life. Furthermore, gaslighting happens in a deliberately slow, precise way to ensure the victim doesn't realize it's even happening. It's hard to recognize this type of abuse because, in addition to lying, the gaslighter may also be incredibly charming. At first, you may even find yourself feeling guilty that you are second guessing this individual. The abuser uses tactics to prove your concerns otherwise, and quickly you begin ignoring your gut. If it was wrong the first couple of times, it must always be wrong. This confusion is precisely what the abuser wants. As a result, without even realizing it, you are in an abusive relationship. So here's some examples of gaslighting. Blatant lying. First, people who gaslight tell obvious lies. You know that they're lying. The issue is how they are lying with such ease. The gaslighter is setting up an abusive pattern. You begin to question everything and become uncertain of the simplest matters. This self-doubt is exactly what the gaslighter wants. Number two, deny, deny, deny. Again, you know they said what they said. However, they completely deny ever saying it. The gaslighter may push the point and ask you to prove it, knowing that you only have your memory of the conversation that they are denying happened. Oh my God, this happened to me so many times. It starts to make you question your memory and your reality. You begin to wonder if the gaslighter is right. Maybe they didn't really ever say what you remember. Consequently, more and more often, you question your reality and accept theirs. Number three, using what you love against you. Additionally, people who gaslight use what is closest to you against you. If you love your job, they will find issues with it. If you have children, the gaslighter may force you to believe you should never have had them. This abusive manipulation tactic causes the victim to question the foundation of themselves as well as what they hold close. Number four, the slow death of self. One of the terrifying parts of gaslighting is the methodical timeline that the abuser uses. The manipulation happens gradually, and over time, the victim morphs into someone entirely different. The most confident human being can become a shell of a person without being aware of it in the process. The victim's individual reality diminishes and becomes that of the abuser. Number five, words versus actions. Notably, a person who gaslights talks and talks. However, their words mean nothing. Therefore, it is important to look at what they are doing. The issues lie in their abusive actions toward the victim. Number six, love and flattery. A common technique of a person who gaslights is to tear you down and then build you back up, only to tear you down again. However, the uneasiness comes from the love and flattery. Whether you realize it or not, you are becoming used to being torn down. However, the praise may lead you to think that the abuser isn't all that bad. Number seven is confusion. Without a doubt, people crave stability, and the gaslighter knows this. The constant confusion that the abuser has instilled leads the victim to become desperate for clarity. More often than not, the victim searches for this clarity in the abuser, thus continuing the cycle and increasing the power that the abuser has. Number eight is projecting. If the gaslighter is a liar and a cheater, they are now accusing you of being a liar and a cheater. You constantly feel like you need to defend yourself for the things that you haven't done. Number nine is you're crazy. The gaslighter knows you are already questioning your sanity. The gaslighter also knows that you search for clarity in the person who's purposely causing the confusion. Therefore, when they call you crazy, you believe it. Furthermore, the gaslighter may also tell other people that you're crazy. This way, if you're ever to approach them for help with your abuser, they wouldn't believe you. The gaslighter has given them a heads up that this would happen. You're too crazy to be taken seriously. Number 10, everyone else is a liar. The abuser may also tell you that everyone else is against you and that they are all liars. Again, believing that everyone else is lying to you forces your sense of reality to be further blurred. People who gaslight want their victims to turn to them for everything so that they can continue the abuse. Ultimately, the quicker you can pick up on these gaslighting techniques, the better luck you will have to avoid a gaslighter's abuse and maintain the distinct reality of your circumstances. Gaslighting is a form of mental and emotional abuse. It promotes anxiety, depression, and can trigger mental breakdowns. Culturally, women are depicted as overly emotional, fragile things who cry at the drop of a hat. Furthermore, the label crazy is eagerly placed on any individual who expresses their feelings in a passionate way. You don't like certain behaviors? You're crazy. You have your own opinions? You're crazy. As a result, crazy has become a term that others use to get off the hook for their own behavior. However, gaslighting is not women being overly emotional or crazy. Gaslighting is psychological abuse and cannot be overlooked. Gaslighting is a technique commonly used by narcissists, sociopaths, and psychopaths. Since these are words we typically hear on television to describe a serial killer, you may not realize this person may be in your day-to-day life. A narcissist, on a surface level, have an excessive admiration or obsession with themselves. Narcissistic abuse stems from the narcissist's utter inability to empathize with others. Individuals with narcissistic personality disorder can be extremely manipulative and have no regard for the well-being of its victims. Sociopaths exhibit complete lack of shame or remorse for their actions. The personality disorder is loosely defined as a person with no conscience. Psychopaths are people suffering from a chronic mental disorder that causes abnormal and violent social behavior. While psychopaths, narcissists, and sociopaths are all over pop culture, they are also everywhere in our day-to-day lives. We just may not realize it. Important to realize, any relationship can be a victim of gaslighting. Gaslighting in a romantic relationship may be easier to notice, and the end goal of the abuser is often apparent to others. More often than not, in romantic relationships, the motive of gaslighting is to gain control. Conversely, gaslighting at work or in relationships with friends or family members can be more difficult to detect. It usually always involves control, money, or infidelity. Coupled with premeditated manipulation and gaslighting tactics, the people who gaslight usually get what they want and are successful at covering things up. Gaslighting emotional abuse causes psychological distress for its victims. With that being said, if you have experienced one form of gaslighting or another, you're not alone. First, try to clarify who is gaslighting you and how. Take notes of any time you have questioned your perception of reality. In order to move on, you need to confirm the gaslighting is happening. Additionally, set aside time to meditate. This will help you stay grounded and objective if the reality of your situation is ever questioned. Talk to friends or family members who you trust. Seek guidance from a therapist or mental health professional. Finally, shift your perspective. You are no longer a victim. You are a survivor. Okay, so after all that, I'm going to get into this with my friend Danny. She came over yesterday and we recorded this interview, and I think it's amazing. And I know that it's a little bit different than what you're used to with my podcast, but I'm trying to go as many different directions that are going to help people as possible. So have a listen, have a watch. And I'll check you later. I'm super excited to talk to you, Danny. I'm so, like, lately people have been telling me so much shit, like, you know, oh, I would rather talk about it anonymously, or I'd rather, you know, they think that the podcast is gonna keep them, you know, from people seeing their shit. And I'm like, yeah, but the whole point is, like, I'm gonna market this to people. I want people to hear it. So they don't want to hear your anonymous shit. Like, I don't care. So you posted something, we've known each other a while, and Facebook's awesome because you can keep up with your friends. Mm-hmm. So I had seen, you know, a few things, and, you know, I just love your pictures of you and your kids. Like, I have a son too, so, like, I love that kind of stuff. Just seeing my friends doing their thing with their kids, moms and sons, love that. So then you posted something about having anxiety over this relationship shit. And I was like, girl, you need to come on my podcast and let's talk about this. Let's get this out there. You never know what somebody looks like. I just spoke on stage about this 2 weeks ago and said, like, you just don't know what somebody looks like. It could be the pretty girl walking down the street and you have no idea. And I've gotten that before too, like, oh, you deal with this? Like, because, and I go, yeah, because you think I've got it all together, right?
Yeah.
Like, what does that even mean? So tell us about the post that you wrote, and then like, how did the anxiety piece come in? And then we'll talk about like the past.
Okay. So what I had posted about was PTSD from emotionally abusive relationships.
That's right. Yep.
Which is an actual thing.
Yes.
The post-traumatic from that and dealing with the anxiety over the last couple months, it's literally been crippling.
Yep.
I've missed days from work. My health has gone down.
Yeah.
My kids notice that I'm not as active with them as I used to be.
Right.
Mom is sad.
Yeah.
We don't go out in public much anymore because
right.
I'm just afraid that I'm gonna run into this person. So it's really taken a shift on my life when I'm usually this outgoing, bubbly person, and everybody's
for sure.
like, you know, I love your posts. You are always so positive.
Yeah, you have
everything's
like
so great.
7,000 likes.
Yeah,
I mean, look at you, of course. Like,
but it's one of those things to where you don't realize it takes over your life.
Right.
And you're like in the midst of dealing with this shitstorm.
Yep.
Until you're just completely consumed with it. And then it's like, how the hell do I get out? It's a crazy thing to say, but I say it a lot. I would much rather go through physical abuse than the bullshit that I've been through here in these last couple of months, than the mental and the emotional abuse, because maybe it's cliche, but you know, scratches, bruises, you know,
they do
sore
heal.
Things, they heal and they go away.
Yep.
But the mental and emotional abuse, like you can never get rid of it.
No.
You just can't.
It's just a matter of managing it. And especially when it's in your adulthood and as a mother, you know, my PTSD is from childhood, and it's a whole different ball game when your trauma is as a child versus, you know, now you have children, and like it's just all fucked up because you're putting your kids in this situation. Like there's so many facets to it. So when did you start seeing this guy? This most recent situation, like when did you start seeing him?
So this most recent situation, we initially met back in May of this year, which it seems like a short term kind of thing.
Oh, it could be like a month.
No, it is just like, there really is no time frame to put on something like, oh, you've only dealt with it for a couple of months.
No.
It only takes a couple of things to really wreck a person.
It really does. Mm-hmm. It really does. And when you guys met and started dating and stuff, like, did you see any signs? Was he just super charming?
It was just...
Oh my God, girl, I totally got it.
So, I mean, just coming out of my marriage, which was hard ending. Like I said, it was just kind of both of us tit for tat and whatever, but we needed to separate ourselves and just our marriage wasn't working. Right after
that... And when was that?
So... We've been in the process of getting a divorce for the last 3 years. We've we're going to get divorced. Now we're back together. We're going to get divorced. We're back together. But he finally moved out of the house January 1st of this year. Our divorce was finally finalized in March.
Gotcha.
So as soon as he moved out in February, I started dating another person that was related to my first ex-husband.
Okay.
He kind of introduced us.
Yeah.
And there was some physical and emotional abuse there, but it was very short-lived.
Yeah.
This person... that I started dating in May or talking to in May. We didn't actually start dating until July, but when I started talking to him in May, he really helped me get away from the other person.
Yep.
Swooped in.
Yep.
Was like, he is so bad for you. Like, you are worth this and you are worth that and you are so worthy and why are you with this person?
Oh, yes.
And he is a hypocrite, but he is religious. I personally am not religious, but he is religious, and so he would throw all of his religious stuff at me.
Right.
And, you know, God has a purpose for you, and sending me all these cute little songs, and I'm just, like, totally swept off my feet.
Like, eating it up.
Yeah, just... hand-delivered flowers to my work all the time, and just, like, so charming and swooping in, being that knight in shining armor.
Oh, yeah.
So, we started dating... again in June after I pushed back a little bit at the beginning of June. So we started dating the end of June. By July 4th, he told me that he loved me. during this entire time, he was always like, I'm going to make you my wife. I'm going to marry you. Oh, he would send me pictures of himself in front of the jewelry store and like...
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
After 2 months?
It wasn't even 2 months.
Oh my God.
It was just like a couple of weeks. And he's like, I'm going to make you my wife. You're going to be my wife. Like, just all this like totally swoon and, you know, falling for all this bullshit.
Yep.
And then...
And I love when girls are like... I would never fall for that. Da, da, da. I'm like, fuck you wouldn't. Like, fuck like, you wouldn't.
Be in that position.
Honest to God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, when you have those endorphins running and, like, and the sex and all of the things, like, fuck you wouldn't be charmed your pants off. Like, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly the way it was. And he knew. I almost felt like he preyed on me a little bit because he knew that it was a struggle for me to get away from this other person.
Right.
And he really kind of swooped in and helped me get away from that person.
Right.
And I think that's how like that attachment
100%.
Formed.
Yep. 100%.
But that was his way of getting to me.
Yep.
And you know, telling me I love you right away. I'm gonna make you my wife. So I mean, I started noticing some red flags when after that we started spending a lot more time together. He works from home, so he can kind of do whatever he wants. And then immediately he started moving his computers into my home.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
And working from my house during the day while I was at work. But it
like, did you agree to that?
So I was like, well, it kind of makes sense because, I mean, like he had his place and he has a daughter the same age as my younger two sons. So they would always hang out all the time. And it was nice to have him around the house.
Totally.
But at the same time, like he still had his own house. So when he would leave at night or leave in the morning to get his daughter ready or to do whatever, it was almost like a sigh of relief. Like, okay, I have my house back. I can breathe. I can.
Right.
But I wouldn't necessarily say that I agreed to it. I was like, yeah, this is a great idea. It was more or less like, well, I'm going to start working from here and then I'm going to help you out. I'm a struggling single mom of five boys.
Right.
So if this charming guy right here is like,
I'm going to
work from home so that way I can help you out around the house and then I'm going to help you with your bills because I'm going to be working here.
You're like, fuck yeah.
Under your roof, eating your food, using your internet. Like, okay, like, whatever.
I don't know. I get it. The swept up and like, you know, let's just hang out all the time. Same
but
thing happened to me.
But it was to keep tabs on me, though.
Right.
That was the thing. Like, I worked, like, my work is literally across the street from my house. So I would always come home on my lunch breaks. And then if I came home on my lunch break, he was working from home. So he could have eyes on me the entire time.
Oh, my God.
And then he would travel for work sometimes. This is when the real red flag kind of stepped in and I started getting a little nervous.
Yeah.
But he... he travels sometimes for work and he'll drive, you know, out of state, whatever.
Right.
He would always share his location with me on the iPhone.
Right.
To let me know that, you know, he was safe, he was okay, and I'm not going to get in an accident. Well, I didn't realize that my location was shared as well. And so when he started knowing where I was or when I was leaving work, it's literally a 2-minute drive from my office to my driveway.
Right.
And 30 seconds into my drive, why didn't you tell me you left work?
Shut the fuck up.
And then that's when the red flag started going off and I was like, wait, what? And then I started kind of putting two and two together and backing off and becoming more defensive with him.
Right.
Because little arguments would start over the dumbest things. Like I couldn't say anything but then I would just shell up and be like, okay, I'm going to take it.
Right.
But then I would start fighting back. Like, no, I didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
Like I did absolutely nothing wrong.
Right.
And then it would just cause these huge explosions. And then that's when
panic can start and you're like, oh my God, how do I get out of this? Mm-hmm. I was in the same situation. Like I literally just kicked somebody out 2 months ago. I did another episode. So it's not like the listeners don't know, but it was the same thing, right? We had both gotten divorced and, you know, we like clung to each other. And I think at the very beginning I knew like, oh shit, this isn't a great, you know, I kind of just knew. But it doesn't take away from the fact that like you start questioning your own shit and panicking and like what's going to happen. And you like come around the corner and like, how do I get this person out of the house?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, did you get to that point where you're like, how do I get him out?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what'd you do?
So in order to get him to move his work stuff out of the house, we had a big argument and a big fight and it was just dumb stuff over and over again. And I just needed him to get out of my house. So one of his biggest issues was the fact that I was friendly with both my ex-husbands because we have kids together.
Right.
So we all co-parent and everything's fine. Well, there was one day where he started packing his stuff up from the house and I was like, oh, thank goodness he's leaving. I was taking my boys to football practice. So I'm like, he can move all of his stuff out while I'm at football practice. I can come home. It's peaceful. It's quiet.
Right.
By the time I left the house to get my boys to football practice.
Like you hadn't asked him. He just started doing it.
It was in the middle of a fight.
Ah,
yeah,
gotcha.
It was in the middle of a huge blow up over something stupid.
Yep.
And so
he
was like, whatever, I'm out of here. You don't want me here. I never physically like spoke the words.
Right.
You need to get out.
Right.
It was just, well, you don't want me here. And throwing his little hissy fits and stuff like that. And I had enough. I had to get my boys to football practice.
Right.
And I was like, just do your thing.
Yeah.
Just do your thing. Like, whatever. So I finally left to get my boys to football practice. And he had texted me halfway there. He's like, I'm so sorry. I'm putting my stuff back in. I'm parked in the garage. Me and Anna are inside. We'll wait for you guys when you get home. And I just had this sinking feeling. I was like, I was so close to having him out.
Right.
Now he's back.
Right.
Well, I ended up getting lost on the way to football practice because it was in a new spot. There was a detour. So I called the older boy's dad and asked him to help me in.
Yeah.
And he did.
Yeah.
And in the middle of that, my two younger sons, their dad happened to be in the area and wanted to see his boys. So he stopped by football practice. So in turn, I ended up at football practice with both my ex-husbands present for the kids.
Right.
But present. And I thought that was my perfect shot to throw that at him. Like, hey, look who I'm with and you're not here. That didn't go over so well.
No, I'm sure
it didn't. But it got him out of my house.
that's the key.
But that's the thing. Like, I would result to
And you know what? I have to say, like, so much of this is resonating from my... Whenever I say, like, oh, I can't speak to this. Yes, I can. Like, I literally did that same thing, like, because everyone's like, get him out of your house, get him out. And I had to resort to telling him I was dating other people and like, you know, sleeping with other people when I really wasn't. But like,
it
was the only thing that got him out.
It brings you to what I've noticed, you know, with my reactions and everything. It brings you to a new low when these people are attacking you.
So true. Things, so true.
You know, after that, I felt, because that was our official breakup, like official breakup.
Right.
And I mean, we still talked and hung out from there on out, but it was always back and forth. But there was never an official, like, yeah, we're back together type of thing. And there was a whole bunch more that happened since then. But just his text
What was
messages,
it, like a couple of months that you guys, that like you were there and he was at your house?
Just... Yeah, so it was like a month, maybe 6 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, so I mean, everything was
so
kind
much
of like
can
a
happen
whirlwind.
In 6 weeks.
Yeah, it was a whirlwind.
Yeah.
But then after that, I was like, okay, he's finally out of my house. But then it turned to, you know, nonstop text messages and harassing and beating me down. And when that started.
And was he still like tracking you?
Yeah. So eventually I turned my location off on my phone.
Right.
They kind of went back and forth every now and then, like when he would travel, he would send me another one. And if we were doing good, I would accept it, whatever.
But, right.
Because I didn't care. Like, I'm not doing anything wrong. I didn't care, whatever. You can know where I'm at type of thing.
Right.
It was just more or less keep the peace.
Yeah, I get that.
But I mean, the text messages and the words that he would say to me after he moved out, that's when things really started to spiral out of control because it drove me to such a dark place to where I would put my kids to bed at night. He wouldn't text me during the day. He would ignore me during the day because he knew that I could control myself during the day.
Right.
But as soon as I would put my kids down to bed at 8 o'clock at night, he would start up with his text messages and he knew my weakness was drinking.
Yeah.
And it literally drove me to drink. I would stay up until 3 o'clock in the morning drinking in my backyard by myself, reading these bullshit text messages that he would send to me, and I would cry. And it would just put me in such, like, I'm getting out of it, and I don't drink anymore. It's been almost 6 weeks, 7 weeks.
Good.
But he knew how to get to me. So he would ignore me during the day, and he knew that would, like, work me up. And I would have so much anxiety every time my phone would go off. Is it him? Is it him? Is it him? Like, what does he have to say? Is he going to be nice today? Is he not?
Right.
And my friends would always tell me, like, block him. Just block him.
I was just going to ask you, why didn't you block
him? You know, because I didn't block him because I was still so wrapped up in the good from the beginning.
Totally.
That I wanted to know if he was going to be nice.
Totally.
I literally, like, begged him for months, like, just love me. Why don't you love me? Saying those words. And that's not me. I'm a strong, sassy, spitfire, fuck you type of person.
Right.
But here I was desperately trying to beg this person just to love me. And it broke me down. And every time I would say, why don't you love me? Why don't you? He would come back with things that were wrong with me, that aren't wrong with me, that are fictional things. But things that he would say are wrong with me in his eyes.
And it is to break you down. And like, so that you, I don't know if it's like a jealousy thing or if they think that if you feel shitty about yourself, you're not gonna want to go be with anybody else. Or I don't know, like I can't figure it out because I don't think it's the same for guys when, you know, like our communication is just different. Guys do this. I don't think girls do a lot of gaslighting. But do you feel like he was doing that so that you wouldn't be with other guys?
Yes, absolutely. Because recently there came a point, somebody that I have been friends with for the last 3 years, kind of involved in the work that I do. We hold a big trunk or treat every year, and him and I, he's done it every year with me, but this year he agreed to help me do it just because my health had declined so bad and I was so stressed out, and I was like, you know, I don't think I can do it. So he offered to help out. And then the other person thought that there was something between him and I, and so it was just like, you know, can't go to work, can't, you know, gotta watch my social media, I gotta, you know, and so just being tracked that way and him thinking that there was somebody else really escalated to a level to where, like, it was criminal, you know, the things that he was saying and doing or threatening.
What was he doing?
And so he thought that this other guy was involved and he was threatening to, you know, what I was telling you earlier, bash his face in with a 2x4. I'm going to rub your blood in it.
So not you. He was saying to the guy, that about the guy that he would be doing that.
And then he would rub my face in his blood. Yeah.
Oh,
and so to a point to that. And then showing up at my house unannounced when my kids are in the living room and I just scream at my kids to get in the back bedroom because I wasn't sure what he was going to do. You know, just it escalated to that level when he thought that I was moving on. And then after saying all those obscene things like, you know, bite the curb, there was a text message about like biting the curb.
Okay, so some girls are going to wonder why you didn't call the police or file a police report.
And I started to. I did start the process of a police report. Did start everything. And they're the ones who told me that it was at a level of felony stalking. And that they're going to do what they need to do, dot their I's, cross their T's, and we're going to get them. And then I got the I love you text messages. I want you to be my wife. The phone calls. If you don't answer your phone, you're never, nobody's ever going to hear from me again. Insinuating that he's going to do something, which I think that's actually him calling my phone right now.
Do you think he knows you're doing this?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, he's calling right now. I don't think he knows I'm doing this.
Well, no, because we haven't really said anything yet. So.
No, which is fine. It's I'm not worried about it.
You're not? Because what if he tries to... I mean, I'm a fucking gun owner, so he can come at me all he wants.
Oh, yeah. No, he won't. No, he won't.
You don't think he's going to say anything?
He had mentioned something like, when you had commented on there, he had said that because he was stalking. So he stalks my social media. That's the reason why I get off whatever. But he used to follow me from his mother's account, so I blocked his mother. And so then he just created So he just created like another random one. But it's fine, whatever. I mean, he's bark and no bite, which I've learned
bark
with
is
these
still
people.
Fucked up, but
but.
Like, what, did he say something about my comment? Is that what you mean?
He said something, about the comment, and then that's when I shut everything down. Because I'm like, I don't want the traces back. But he wouldn't. He's bark and nobody.
I totally get it.
But
how do you know, though, that he's all bark and no bite? How do you know for sure?
So, just recently, I got in touch with his ex-wife. Because while he was trying to make things work with me, he was trying to make things work with her, too. And so she messaged me one morning and was like, hey, I just thought you would want to know this. And I was like, oh, fuck. Thank you.
Yeah.
And it was Monday morning when I saw it. So that's how I started my week. And I was like, oh, all right, whatever. And so that opened the line of communication with me and her. And she was like, he's this person. He does this. He does that. I was like, I've already lived through all of this. I know. And so I filled her in on my situation. She filled me in on what she went through. And she was like, to be honest with you, she has older kids. She's like, my oldest daughter is the one who found out that you guys were dating a couple months ago.
Right.
And she came to me and said, oh my gosh, mom, those poor kids.
The and older I was like, daughter.
Yeah, the older daughter. And I was like, I wish somebody, because my comfort zone with him was like, well, nobody really knows him.
Right.
You know, being, you know, popular on social media or whatever. Oh yeah. My gosh, you have so many friends. You get so many likes. You get this, you right. get that. But I really keep to myself, like out in public.
Right.
People know of me, but people don't know me. And right. I keep my circle really small. 100%. And I like the people that I talk to keep their circles really small too.
Right.
Yep. And so I found that with him. I'm like, well, he grew up in Caldwell. Nobody out this way really knows him.
Right.
He has a really good job. Like, yep. I have nothing to worry about. I'm not going to have to worry about this social drama.
Uh-huh. That's so funny because it was the same yeah. thing with my person who's also still texting me. All of this is just hitting me like, yes, Brooke, you do deal mm-hmm. with this. Like,
yeah.
You just haven't been hit in the face. That doesn't, and just like you said, I would much rather have gotten into a physical fight than... Yeah. some of the shit that happened, but I felt the same way. I'm like, he doesn't run in the same circles.
Yeah.
He doesn't do like all of the stuff.
You feel safe.
Yeah. And yeah. I didn't, and I was not embarrassed because I wasn't yeah. like bringing him places.
Yeah.
Everyone knew he still lived here, mm-hmm. but I'd be like, yeah, but we're on separate sides of the house. It was just true. But like,
right.
still in my fucking house. Like he's still here. Well, he was till 2 months ago, but
yeah,
I do get this. I yeah. do. It's fucked up. It's yeah. fucked up and it fucks with your head so hardcore.
It does. The stuff like, and one thing that I noticed, like my work really suffered, which I felt really bad because yeah. I'm really good at what I do. I'm really passionate about what I do.
I have noticed that. Like I know yeah. you really love your job and stuff.
Super, super passionate about yeah. what I do. And I felt like it, like I didn't enjoy anything anymore. Yeah. And so it's kind of going backwards a little bit. So what had happened was in the middle of September, I found out that he was talking to another girl while we were together. Like the entire,
gotcha.
Even when things were good.
Gotcha.
She had messaged me again on Facebook.
Yep.
Sending me screenshots like, oh, he just sent me this morning. And so my comment back to her, just because that's the way I am, was, are you getting the same dick pics that I'm getting too?
Oh God.
So that was my comment back to her. And then I just kind of left it at that and
yeah.
blew up at him.
Like, is he taking one and sending it to both of you?
Right. Did you get the same one? Yeah. So,
we don't want your right? dick pics.
We don't like them.
We don't like them.
We don't
the ugliest
them.
Piece of yeah. your body.
Please don't do that. So I found that out one morning and, kind of went back and forth with him a little bit. Telling
yeah.
him, like you're, cause before then we were trying to kind of work things out and see what we could do.
Right.
And then that happened. And I was like, you're a liar. You're this, you're that. And at first he didn't really take accountability for what he did. He was
right.
like, oh, fuck you, whatever. Like yeah. you talk to other people too. And I'm like, no, really, I don't.
Right.
You know, like.
You don't do that.
Like I have no time.
Exactly.
I don't do that.
When
I have no time.
We have the time for any of that.
When I'm sitting here begging you to love me and then I have 5 kids to take care of, I run a business. Like
yeah.
I don't have time for the shit that
nope.
you pull.
No.
So he kind of just didn't acknowledge it. Like somehow it was my fault.
Right.
I was the crazy one. It was my fault.
Yeah.
Whatever. So we moved on from them. The next day, there had been no communication back and forth, but I was still hearing from the other girl that he was talking to her still. And like,
right.
oh, he said that he wants us to move in this big house. And I was like, he told me that he bought the house for me and my boys.
Oh,
but,
my
like,
God.
All this stuff. It was just everything had finally just come to a head. And
yeah.
I drove to my kids' football practice. And I have an underlying condition that causes really bad vertigo.
The thing that we want you to understand, you as the listeners and the viewers, is that there's two types of things. There's anxiety and there's panic. And panic disorder or a panic attack, you don't even have to have the disorder like I do. It can manifest in so many ways. And you may have it in you, but you've just never been in a situation. We talk about how anxiety is, oh, I'm going to go camping in 2 weekends or 2 weeks and there may be a bear. Panic is you're in the forest and the bear is attacking.
Yeah.
And so when they talk about fight or flight, I am in constant fight or flight because of my PTSD and have issues with cortisol and my endocrine system because of it. People
right.
think, oh, there's no physical manifestation. Bullshit. I can't lose weight because I have such high cortisol levels.
Right.
You know how much I work out and eat well? The cortisol keeps me holding onto that fat because
yeah.
it's fight or flight. So I'm thinking to myself, people don't understand, it feels like a heart attack. And there isn't much you can do. And so when you are in the car and you're blacking out, that is a physical manifestation of stress.
Yeah.
End of story.
Yep.
So then absolutely. What happened after that?
So then after that, obviously, I had to spend the night in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And
did they treat you, like, was it when you got to the hospital?
So when I got to the hospital, they pretty much knew that it was stress.
Right.
Induced and everything.
Did they do an EKG?
Yes, so I had an EKG, and then I had a CAT scan just from my underlying issues.
Sure.
They wanted to make sure I didn't have a stroke.
Sure, of course.
Because it's one thing that can happen with what I have. So, I mean, they ran all these tests. They ran everything. They could not stop my vertigo with all the medicine and tricks that they were trying. And, they couldn't stop it. So at the end of the night, they ended up giving me Valium and sending me home, basically to sedate me because I was still off the charts.
So were they not... I guess just my question is to sort of educate people, not necessarily that I don't know this, but when you do go to the hospital with that kind of stuff, they do send in a psychiatric watch, don't they? Because it's not suicidal. It's more of a, are you going to be okay?
Yes.
Kind of thing. And that can be scary in itself.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So then tell me... Like, what did he find out about this?
Yes. So the next day he found out about it on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
did you put it on Facebook?
So I didn't put what happened on Facebook.
Okay.
The next day, what had happened was my youngest son had a field trip at a fire station.
Oh, cool.
The next day.
Good.
And his dad was there and happened to take a picture of me and Mac in front of the ambulance or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Mac because I still had my wristband on and like literally fresh out of the hospital.
Oh, right.
And his daycare teacher was talking to me about it because dad had to take him to the field trip. And she's like, oh, I'm so glad you're out of the hospital, blah, blah, whatever.
Yeah.
So I was explaining to Mac, like, mommy had to take a ride in one of these last night, but mommy's okay. Mommy's fine.
Yeah.
That type of thing. And so
and you should be able to be open about this stuff. Like,
And I posted a picture on Facebook and Instagram of me and Mac next to the ambulance and the fire truck at his field trip. And I was like, I'm so happy that I was able to make it, you know, fresh out of the hospital, showed mommy what Mac wrote in last night and left it at that. And
again, I want to say to people, you can fucking post whatever
you
want. You should not do that. I love that you are, first of all, talking about this with me, but understand that part of it too, which is
this is my life.
Stop what I'm doing. Like, fuck you.
Like, this is my life. This is what happened. And I, you know, and I definitely things that I post about, you know, real stuff with five boys. I mean, shit happens.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, overall, and so I just posted, you know, his field trip and stuff like that. And despite blocking accounts and stuff like that, there's always a way for them to see what they want to see.
Of course.
And so he saw
I'm a hacker. I could get into anything.
Yeah. And so he ended up seeing it and he was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I can't help but feel responsible for this. Like, this is completely my fault. This is all my fault. And then the I love yous and the I'm sorry's and all that came in.
Yeah.
And then, of course, here I am in a time of need again to where my health is to shit. I couldn't go to work. I couldn't drive.
Right.
I had to take a couple of days off of work because I couldn't drive. The next day, I had another episode to where I passed out and hit my head on the bathroom counter.
Shit, girl.
And... my oldest son grabbed my phone and it happened to be, or had his phone. No, he was texting my oldest son because they had a football game that day. And he was texting my son, asking my son how his game went.
Mm-hmm.
And we had just gotten home. I had to have my ex-husband drive my car home because I had another vertigo episode.
Right.
Couldn't drive. Soon as they got us all home, I went into the bathroom to change my pants, lost my balance and passed out and hit my head on the bathroom counter. My oldest son had just been texting this person, talking about his game, and was like, mom passed out. She's on the bathroom floor.
Shit.
And so the next thing I know, he's at my house. And I'm like, I don't need you to be here.
Right.
Like, I'm fine. I'm good.
Right.
I'm up. I'm functioning.
Right.
And a big old bump on my head, but I was fine.
Right.
I was like, I don't need you here. He's like, nope, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying here. I'm going to take care of you. All of this is my fault, blah, 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 whatever. So he
and again.
Yeah,
like, charming and you feel good and you just want somebody to take care of you. I get it.
Yeah.
No judgment.
Later that night, he ended up going and getting me some medicines to make me feel better.
Yes.
That
you can say yeah. whatever you want.
So he ended up driving to Oregon and getting some CBD stuff.
Yep.
And, you know,
yep.
here's your vape pen, here's mm-hmm. your oils, here's your this.
Yep.
It's going to help you, which I'm thankful he did because it actually really did help me.
Oh, yeah.
But just like money wasn't an object to him. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to spend this $300 and all this is for you and I'm doing this for you. And just like Prince Charming.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I'm going to take care of you. And so that's what he did for the next 2 days. And then he had to leave town for California. So unannounced shows up at my house on a Monday. I didn't go to work because I wasn't feeling good. Couldn't drive still dizzy.
Yeah.
So he comes to my house on Monday before he flies out to California to make sure that I'm okay and make sure that I'm home.
Mm-hmm.
And so he flies out to California Tuesday morning at like 3 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't sleep. I wasn't feeling good. I walk in the garage to grab a soda. Sure as shit, my fucking tires flattened on my car, like completely flattened.
What?
Completely flat. And I was like, that was not like that the other day. I hadn't driven since Saturday, but there's no way it would have went flat. There was no nail in it. There was no nothing. So I immediately get on the phone and I'm like, hey, did you do this? He said, no, of course. But he's like, I'll be home tomorrow, because this was on Tuesday. He's like, I'll be home tomorrow afternoon. You don't have to go to work anyways.
Oh,
you just stay home and relax.
Oh my God.
You'll be fine. And
what?
Me being me, I'm like, no, fuck you. Somebody's going to come fix my tires. So sure enough, later Tuesday afternoon, I had somebody come fix my tire, found a ride to work.
Did they say that it had been punctured?
Yes. So there was nothing wrong with the tire. There was no nothing. They asked if my kids messed with the valve stem because of how low it was.
Oh.
And I was like, well, my kids haven't come home since my episode. Their dads were taking care of them because I couldn't function.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, actually, my kids haven't been home, but thank you for that bit of information.
Right.
So as I'm sitting in the tire shop, I text this person.
Because why would they be doing that?
Right?
Like, come
on. As flat as it was. I mean, it was like flat.
Right, right.
So I ended up texting him and I was like, so they didn't find any nails or screws or anything in my tire. They asked if my kids messed with the valve stem, but my kids haven't been home in 3 days.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, that's so weird. And I was like, was it you? And he put, ha, 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 yes, it was. And I put, I knew it was you. And then he sent the little emojis of like,
Oh, well, I mean, seriously.
And then I just didn't know what to say after that. I was like,
wait, what's happening?
He's like, I told you I'd be home on Wednesday and I would fix it. I'm like,
because, I mean, there was nothing else he could lie about. Like,
yeah,
there was nothing
like,
else.
It was
because
just,
we
it
just
was what it was.
Found out that, that it was the, whatever, the valve, and no one's been around, and like, you can't say no, because that's how the tire was flat, and
exactly.
So when they get caught, they
literally
are like,
it's like, ha-ha,
sorry, oops,
my bad.
It's like, you're just digging yourself deeper and deeper, and it's almost like empowering now, because, although, I still get it, like,
it's hard.
This guy texted me the last couple of days, and I keep going, he owes me money, which he does.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's like going to Vegas when you lend somebody money like that, or you pay for stuff and then you think you're going to get the money back. You go to Vegas with money that you're willing to let go of.
Yeah.
It's the same with this. I should just block him and be like, fuck it. I'm out the money.
Yeah.
But I keep saying that. Like,
that's what I do too. I always get sucked back in. I'm like, well, what if he's going to say something nice?
Right.
Or he promised me this, or he promised me that, or he promised my kids this. Like, maybe we can wait it out a little bit until, you know, like, it sounds crazy to, like, when you say it out loud, it sounds absolutely crazy, but in your head, you justify it.
Exactly.
Like, this is a great plan.
This is what
this
gaslighting is. It's that they make you feel like you're, like, wrong for all of the things that they're doing. And you're like, what? And then and another thing is that because we're so busy and you have 5 kids and I just have the one and it's still a lot of work and own a business and I'm doing podcast, you know, I have all this stuff. So when do I have time to, like, really sit down and figure out, like, is this guy charming or is it this or is it this? Like, all I know is the rush of endorphins.
Mm-hmm.
All I know is, oh my gosh, he wants me back. Or it feels like, oh, I'm needed. And I'm like,
they
all
make
these
you feel so, he has made me feel so unwanted and unworthy. And at one point, so I like pocket knives and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, totally.
And one of mine, I lost one of mine, so I ordered a new one, and he happened to be there when it showed up or whatever, and he doesn't like it. And so he always makes comments. I have no idea.
You think he's going to get knifed in the back or
something? Probably should.
Yeah. I'm going to edit that out. Yeah. No. Say whatever you want.
He didn't like it. And so he would always joke with me about my knife. And there was one night where him and I were going back and forth, and he put me in such a deep, dark, dark, dark spot that I did cut myself.
Yeah.
And from that day forward, when I let him know what I did, because it was pretty bad, and I let him know what I did, and nobody else knew.
Yeah.
Now they know. But it's fine.
Had you been a cutter before?
I hadn't cut since I was like 14, and it was one time. But he drove me to that point to where I just needed to feel something.
Yeah.
Like, I was just so, you know, he made a comment that my kids would have been better off without me, and that night I was starting to open up to him about, you know, some of the things that had happened to me when I was a child or, you know, just like growing up and stuff like that. And I had really opened that door to him, which I don't talk to a lot of people about anything or like my past suicide attempts. I really, like, nobody really knows. It's not something I want to talk about, but I don't talk about.
Right.
But I finally opened that up to him, and immediately
you're talking about it now.
Yeah. And now's the time though. Like, I don't want to hide behind anything anymore.
Good.
And, you know, he used it against me.
Yeah.
And, you know, your kids would be better off without you.
Yeah.
Like, you're a psychopath. Your kids would be much better off without you. And it's like,
and you start to believe it. And I have a lot of friends and people who've been listening and are like, well, why did you allow that? Or why did this or why did that? And it's like, well, maybe you're strong, meaning you as listeners and, you know, watching this video. And you can say, you can throw this like reasoning at it, but you've never been in it. And so you don't know what it's really like to be manipulated. And I have a very strong sense, you know, we're badass girls, but like there's stuff that just goes chink and you're like, oh wait, what? And all of that goes away.
Yep.
Like if I don't get enough sleep or, you know, if this stuff's coming at me, it's like, you know, good for fucking you that whoever can like stop this all from happening. Like, good for you. It's not that way for us. It's not that way for so many people. And we need to make it okay for them to say this and not be, and not have it come back to them like, why didn't you just call the police? Or why didn't you just do this?
Yeah.
Fuck you, I didn't.
Yeah, and it happens all the time. People are always like, why don't you just block him?
Yeah.
Why are you still talking to him?
Yeah.
You know, because we do have our ups and downs and stuff like that. And you know, I get a lot from my younger boys' dad, you know, because we're still really friendly. And, you know, we talk about things, and he's always been there for me when, you know, shit goes down.
Yeah.
But I feel safe with him to talk to him about certain things. And he's just like, why don't you block him? Why don't you get away from him? Why don't you, you know? And it's like, it's not that easy.
It's not.
I would much rather keep the peace and just smile and nod while he's being nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love you and this and that. And I would much rather keep the peace while I know what I'm doing in the background. You never reveal your next move.
Well, I'm so glad that you're getting this taken care of. I do want to sort of touch on your past stuff and like how you feel like that, you know, the word trigger I kind of hate, but it is the best way to explain things.
Right, yeah.
Like what happened to you as a child when you were cutting, you know, was there anything that moved into choices you made in marriages?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so back in my childhood, you know, when I was 14, my parents split up. They got divorced. My mom kind of, to a sense, abandoned us.
Yeah.
That's a harsh word because I am reconnected with my mother and I love her. And, and now being an adult, I understand what she did. But she, when her and my dad got divorced, she ran back to Texas to be with her family and just kind of left my brother and I.
Right.
You know, with my dad. And my dad wasn't really in a state to really fully care for my brother and I.
Right.
And eventually I had ended up in foster care.
Oh.
And so when I went into foster care, the son of my foster parents was best friends with my ex-husband, my first ex-husband.
Okay.
So that's how I met my first ex-husband when I was 16.
Gotcha.
In foster care. He was best friends with my foster brother. And I was so desperate for a family.
Yeah.
So desperate for a family. He was the youngest in his family, and his siblings were 20 plus years older than him.
Right.
You know, and his parents were retired. They had just moved to Idaho. We were living in California at the time.
Right.
His parents retired to Idaho, so he was kind of on his own, and I really didn't have a family.
Right.
Ended up getting pregnant when I was 16 with him, and we had a miscarriage, and that kind of like bonded us together.
Right.
And we stuck together and knew that ultimately we wanted a family.
Right.
So we got married a couple days after my 18th birthday, and we had two babies, 10 months apart, eventually. We were young. We didn't have any help, anything like that. And two babies while I was 19, and I was a stay-at-home mom, and he had just turned 21 and wanted to start his life and live his life. I don't blame him. But we were young and dumb. We didn't know what we were doing. And the next thing you know, we have three babies under the age of two.
Shit.
And we're ready to call it quits. So we called it quits. But I dealt with horrible postpartum depression from those babies and being so young and not knowing what to do, and he didn't know how to handle it. And so a lot of his comments too were, you know, the boys and I would be much better off if you weren't here, because I was depressed every single day. I couldn't function. I couldn't get
off
the couch.
This is why we need to fucking talk about this, because it's a fucking thing. And like, you have postpartum depression and then somebody can't deal with it, but what if they had the tools to deal with it? Because a lot of this is, I want to get the information out to people who don't have mental illness or haven't, you know, lived with this, because don't ever fucking say that to somebody who's had three children of yours, that like, you can't deal with it. Like, find them help. It's an illness. It
help
may
them.
Have come from something like pregnancy.
Yeah.
But it you need to support that, not make them feel bad about it.
Make them feel worse. And, you know, I he was young. He didn't know. Not that it's an excuse or anything like that at the time, you know, but, you know, I did hate the things that he said to me. And because of him, I remember, I vividly remember him getting a piece of mail saying that we owed money in taxes and somehow it was my fault.
Oh, yeah.
And I was laying on the couch. Our youngest son together, Bentley, was only 4 months old at the time.
Yeah.
And I'm laying on the couch and I'm tired. It's a Sunday.
Right.
And he got that in the mail and started yelling at me, screaming and yelling at me, and said, the boys and I would be much better off without you.
Oh.
Well, I had had anxiety medication because I was trying to get treated for the depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
And I had just filled my medication the week prior.
Yeah.
So I took it, or took what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Laying on the couch, and I said, okay, all right. I was like, I'm going to go upstairs and lay down. I went upstairs and I took the entire bottle of Xanax that I had. Ended up passing out on our bed. He came upstairs at one point. He left me there for a couple of hours before he called 911. He knew something was up, but he left me there for a while. Ended up calling his parents, and his parents coming over, and his parents saying, she's not really breathing. You need to call an ambulance.
Right.
And so called an ambulance. They picked me up or whatever. And I was on life support for a couple of days.
Wow.
And as soon as, the one thing that really bothered me was while I had the tubes down my throat, and obviously I was handcuffed to the bed.
Of course.
And I had the tubes down my throat and the machines breathing for me. He took pictures of those. And
shut the fuck up.
He would show me when we would fight, look at what you did to our family. And during the marriage and the divorce and just kind of the aftermath afterwards, we're good now.
Of course.
But during that time,
no,
I tried to commit suicide 4 times.
That's trauma.
Yeah.
That is trauma. And people need to understand that you know, whether you think you have a strong mind or not, when you're told those things and you're shown pictures and you're, you know, it's the same as when I was a kid with my mom and what she would tell me. Now they seem so silly, but as a kid, it was traumatizing. I wasn't allowed out of the house. I wasn't,
absolutely,
you know, all of those things.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it may seem minuscule to people now,
right?
But you're, and what you're saying is obviously very, toxic, But a lot of people will always come back and say, why did you let that happen? Or why did, you know?
Yeah, there's always a lot of why questions. And I mean, you really can't answer them because when, obviously, when you're in that state of mind, nobody wants to willingly kill themselves. Right. I mean, a lot of people are successful, and thank goodness a lot of people aren't successful.
Right.
But, and in my case, I mean, 4 times and I wasn't successful. So, I mean, there's a reason why I'm still here.
Of course.
But in that state of mind, I can honestly say that, like, I didn't want to die. I didn't believe what he was saying to me. Like, no, my boys would not be better off without me here.
Right.
But when you're in that state of mind, there's so much hurt. Mm-hmm. When your mind is hurt, it's so different than your body being hurt.
Yep.
And that's the only way that you know how to stop it.
Yep. That's exactly right. I don't talk a lot about suicide because I feel like suicide prevention is not really a thing. You can't, you know, if somebody has a plan,
they're gonna do it.
And you need to just, you know, help people get through each day. And somebody asked me a couple weeks ago, like, what do we do for somebody who just doesn't want help? And I said, there's nothing you can do. And I said, maybe you needed a different answer, and so you should ask somebody else. My answer is, you know, once somebody has made that decision, they've made the decision. Mm-hmm. And it is exactly what you just said. The only way that people feel like they can stop hurting, and we constantly talk about how it's physical versus, you know, mental and emotional. And I too forget to say or to point out that it's all physical. I mean, our gray matter in our brain, you know, produces certain things, produces the electricity that causes what we're talking about, these, you know, disorders. And just like knowing that you can't function with your body if your mind is broken. And so being in a situation where you're feeling love, but then it's like a push and pull. Mm-hmm. And we can't, you know, rectify things or justify things in our head when it's broken and these relationships don't allow for fixing. They don't allow for us to, like, you know, introspect and become a better person, because it just keeps knocking you down and knocking you down. And we as human beings, I rarely cry on these, but we as human beings need to build each other up. Recently I had a profound thought that, like, the women in my life, you being one of them, are building each other up. There's this slow moving movement. Yes. I don't know how to put it. It's not called anything. There's no hashtag.
Right.
It's just this, like, we're taking over. Like, and we're, you know, building one of us up, and then the next one's moving up. And then, and there's men involved too, you know, like the good ones, because we're not here to bash men.
Right. I mean,
we're raising amazing men.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
So there's just this movement, and I think this kind of thing is going to work. And, you know, there's different motivational speakers that that are doing it too, that are just lifting up. And that's the antithesis of what you're talking about with this, you know, abuse, this mental abuse, is that it's just holding you down. Mm-hmm. And you can't get past it. You want to, but, like, it's just, it's this energy that keeps you down. I don't know. It's the only way I can explain it. But slowly we're coming out of that. We are getting out of it. And you, especially with this specific situation, we want to make sure everybody knows that you are on the verge of taking legal action and getting yourself safe. And I want everybody to know that I will not let anything happen to her. I promise. And there's a lot of people that are looking out as well. So, but I just think that it's really important for us to understand that, you know, you may not come out and say, oh, I have panic disorder, or I've been to the therapist, or whatever, which I'm getting away from in a lot of these episodes, because so many people have mental illness.
Right. Yeah.
And it, you know, I don't know if you've heard the first one, but I talk about mental health is the how, and everybody needs mental health, but not everybody has or needs to be treated for mental illness. Yeah. So when we talk about mental illness, it's not necessarily that you've gone and had a diagnosis and like been treated and done all these things. The fact that you had to go to the hospital,
right,
that's a mental illness, that you hit a wall and had to do that. So I don't want people thinking like, oh, you have to have an official diagnosis and you have to like be on lithium or whatever to be able to talk about this.
Right.
It's situational. Mm-hmm. It's postpartum is situational.
Right.
So
yeah,
I don't know. Like, this is really good. Is there anything else you can think of that you want to say about panic or anxiety or like your health stuff and why you're like, what happens when you're unable to leave the house and not work? You just, do you feel like tired?
It's almost like I feel like my body just can't function.
Yeah.
Like I just can't, like I can't get up. I can't,
yeah.
I can't move. I can't, I feel almost paralyzed.
Yep.
And just my brain is foggy. I can't put, you know, things together.
Yeah.
Like you're just not rational.
Like you can't come up with words.
Yeah. When you're in that,
there.
That like anxiety, panic state, like nothing is rational.
Yep.
Absolutely nothing is rational. And right. I noticed that I'll make very like manic decisions, mm-hmm. or very like big purchases or something
right.
like that. And
it's
I'm like,
manic.
I shouldn't have done that.
Yep.
But I'm in that state of, it comes in so many different forms.
Yeah.
But I'm in that state of like, you know, I'm almost like panicking or my anxiety is so high or just, I don't know what to do. I'm going to go do
right.
this. And it's just
paranoia. Like
yes.
if you, you know, that happens with me. I mean, I'm self-employed, but my clients, I'm like, oh God, do they not know, you know, do they need this right away? And I mean, and I'm getting
yeah.
emails saying from them, oh, no worries. Like a week from now, it's fine. I'm like, yeah, but do they really mean that? And do
yeah.
they like
uh-huh.
what's happening right now?
You create scenarios uh-huh. in your head. And then another thing is like, I have a hard time sleeping in my bedroom. I always sleep out in the living room. I sleep
yeah.
on the couch. Like that's another thing that's kind of shifted
hmm.
just because I feel like I have to watch and see like, is somebody gonna show up at my house?
Really?
And so I panic about stuff like
oh,
that too.
It's the worst.
And I just don't want to be out in public. Cause I'm like, you know, black truck,
right.
you know,
right.
like I'm always looking out everywhere I'm at and
right.
it's just crippling. And it's
it
like,
is.
Well, then I'm just not going to leave my house.
Yeah. I get that completely. Are you sleeping okay though? Even on the couch?
No. I mean, I started taking some stuff to help me sleep at night,
yeah.
but even then I don't sleep very good. I just,
yeah.
my mind wanders, your mind races. I don't know
yeah.
what it is about the middle of the night, but your mind just wanders.
I think because we're not sitting and doing
yeah.
other things.
Yeah.
All we're doing is sitting, laying with our
yeah.
with our thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
I used
processing.
To wake up all the time
yeah.
at like 3 o'clock. And
yeah. That seems to be the
to
hour,
do.
3 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
and it's up mind racing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another reason why too. Like I have such a hard time functioning when I'm at work or you know with the kids
of the sleep.
Because I don't sleep.
And that is, I could do a whole episode on that.
Yeah.
Like sleep is everything.
Yeah.
I talk about you know I have bipolar and I'm treated with lithium, and it's a lifesaver for me. But there's not enough lithium in the world to keep me sane if I haven't slept the night
yeah.
before. It's just it's impossible.
It's bad. Yeah.
And there's not enough coffee to, you
yeah.
know, like you, it's a total imbalance.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to get sleep, but, I'm so, so
yeah.
grateful because like I said, not everyone is willing to do this. And I really have this thing where I want people to understand that this is the face of mental illness.
Yeah.
This is the face of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, what you think in your mind with the straight jacket and crazy hair. And I mean,
yeah
probably them too. But
right.
when recently I did this show and the producer looks similar to you, petite blonde, super beautiful. And I do bring it up. Like, what do you think mental illness looks like? Like, what do you think anxiety disorder looks like? And the producer has bipolar. And so we went on the news and we actually got some comments like that, like,
yeah.
oh, I had no idea. And
yeah.
I talk about the tattoos where
mm-hmm.
it's on the show that I was on stage, I had long sleeves and I covered this, you know, and I'm like, you know, maybe if you've seen me and you see the neck tattoo, you're like, yeah, it'd be pretty crazy to get a neck tattoo. It was all just a
yeah.
joke, right?
Yeah.
And people are laughing. I'm like, but the truth is you just don't know someone
don't.
Walking down the street. You just don't. And
mm-hmm.
it could be your mom. It could be, you know, your kid. You
right.
just don't know. And you just have to be open about it. So
yeah.
I am super grateful because This is the third that I've asked somebody, and I do want people to come in and talk about it, even if it's anonymous, but this is going to make such a bigger impact, like such a big impact. And we're going to change the world.
Yeah.
You and me.
Yeah.
And anyone else that wants to talk to me, like we could have a round table. Yeah. We could all sit and talk. We could probably find 50 girls to talk about gaslighting and have that whole conversation. Maybe that's a direction that it takes as well. I'm willing to go all those directions, you know?
And I know it's a scary thing, but for me to come and do this and just not want to be anonymous and want to be so candid and so open and just lay it all out on the table.
Proud of you.
You know, and then, you know, you mentioned the whole safety thing and, you know, I feel safe. I feel comfortable because as soon as these people are outed and they realize, because their biggest thing is like, they don't want you to talk about it. They don't want people to know, like, why'd you talk to your friends about it? Why'd you tell your mom about it? What, you know, why are you telling people about this stuff? I'm telling people about this stuff because it fucking happened to me. And it's real. And it affected me. And I'm no longer going to let somebody discredit my feelings and tell me that, you know, when I sit here and I tell you, like, you hurt me. I loved you. You hurt me. And you call me a liar. I'm not lying. These are my feelings. This is how I feel. This is what's happened. And you're not going to keep me quiet anymore.
Oh, so proud of you. Like, I'm feeling so much for you right now. Proud of you.
You know, like, it just, I'm not going to put up with it anymore. It is what it is. These things happen. These people exist. And we exist.
That's so, exactly right. And and I think we just hit this whole, like, when people are asking, like, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do this? Like, well, fuck you. Now we're talking about it. Like, you know how hard it is to come out and talk about this stuff? I thought it was easy. And when I started asking people to come and talk and they were like, you know, weird about it, I'm like, I guess it's not that easy. You know, like, I'm all about just saying your shit. And this is our answer to the why question. Why? Because If somebody is in danger, their safety is a concern. Like, that's scary. And so you've got to get to a point where it's like, okay, now, you know, legally you're okay and this and that. But you,
there's a bigger purpose behind it.
Much bigger purpose.
A much bigger purpose behind it. And this is kind of my, like, I'm going out with a bang. Here it is. It's all out on the table. Got my middle finger up in the air. And like, you know, here it is. You know, I'm not going to be
so
controlled
proud of you.
Anymore in that situation. And it's like, this is real.
I feel like this is, and it's such a rally cry. Like, you know, women are going to hear this and see it and be like, all right, now I can talk about it.
I hope women, or even men, if they're in a situation like that too, because it can happen to men, but I really hope people feel empowered. Like, you don't have to live with it. You don't have to deal with it. You don't have to, you know, that's not your life. There is a way out. Your way of doing it is your way of doing it, but there is a way out.
Exactly.
And there's no right or wrong way to get out.
And don't ever think that you have to get to the point of physical violence. I certainly was not at that point. There were times, though, and I think I'm just not being open about it, that he put his fist through the wall. Or, you know, like, he was super drunk. And he brought a girl home. Like, he brought a fucking girl home. And
oh my gosh.
To go, well, there's no domestic violence is bullshit. Because it's almost worse. If there was domestic violence, he would have been out. He would be in jail. He would have whatever. This is so different. And I didn't have felony stalking. I didn't have, he fucking lives here. Like, I can't say anything about it. So I don't know. It's just such a realization to make excuses and then see that, no, Brooke, you're making an excuse. Like, that did happen. He put his fist through the wall. He brought a girl home. He was so drunk that he brought a girl home. Well, my path to self-awareness right now has, it's just exponential. And I think you'll feel that too. I know you already do, but like, it will be so, especially when this comes out and it's like, people are hearing you and seeing you, it is going to be like nothing you've ever experienced before. I've always been open about having mental illness and having PTSD, but in February when I started the podcast, it was just like, I can't even describe it. Things just opened and people literally from all around the world are messaging me on Twitter and like, you know, oh my God, I'm not alone. Like, I'm dealing with this too. So I think this is going to hit a chord. Because it is more about relationships and functional ways of dealing with people, as opposed to just having a manic episode or having an anxiety attack. It's like, these things are situational and functional, in the sense that, like, we just want to be loved. We just want to be loved. And there, and we get that love, and then things change chemically in our brains. That's all there is to it. So I'm so proud of you. This is going to be amazing. So I just want to thank everybody for watching and for listening. And like I say, every episode, I hope that you take care of yourselves and each other.